Welcome to Show and Tell with the Two Mortgage Guys. We come to you live on Facebook and YouTube every Tuesday at noon. With rising interest rates since the start of the year, everyone wants to know, will they come back down or are they going to go on up? Stick around.
Today, we're going to share with you a recent interview between the RE Source and Barry Habib. Barry's an American entrepreneur, mortgage industry executive, best-selling author, and founder and CEO of MBS Highway. Barry's also a well-known professional speaker and TV commentator on the mortgage and real estate markets. Watch this short video and make sure not to miss the ending.
What's up, RE Source Nation? We're getting right into it today because I know you guys want to hear from Barry, and I know things are tough right now and everybody's panicking a little bit. And I got it. First of all, Barry, I went back years. I think our relationship goes back a decade now, coming in hard times like this to bring clarity, to bring leadership. So before I get right into it, thank you again. But for many years, you've been able to come in and speak leadership into to tough times in the business. So before we get into it, thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Oh man, thank you. You're the one that's putting out some great content for people to get through this time too, brother. Always.
Appreciate it. Realtors, lenders, and borrowers, because I know this is getting shared. Stop what you're doing. Don't put us on a second screen and keep working. Literally stop what you're doing. Grab coffee, grab your Rockstar. That's what I drink every morning. And listen up. This is probably the most important piece of content that you'll watch for the rest of the year. You need to share it. You need to take notes. You really need to understand. Because overall, I'm going to ask Barry one question and we'll get to a couple of viewer questions that will really help you navigate the next quarter, which I believe will be a very, very tough quarter in Q4 of 2022. So in general, Barry, to get us going, get us right into it, the first question, Barry, how long will the pain last and when will rates come back down?
So here's the spoiler alert. There's good news at the end of this, okay? But, you know, Brian, we've had this conversation that spoken on it so many times, and I'm sure that you recall, we said that the summer we're going to have a lot of heartburn in rates.
Yep.
That you know, a lot of people felt that inflation was peaking earlier in the year, and I remember coming on and saying, you know, that they don't know what they're talking about, and that we felt that rates would have a tough time over the summer, and that was going to cause, you know, the words that I used were heartburn for us in the mortgage industry. But even though we had given that warning, going through it still is very, very difficult to do. So let's understand some of the basics. Number one, what drives mortgage rates? I mean, you think if you're in the mortgage or real estate industry, you would know what drives mortgage rates. No, it's not the Fed.
Right.
It has a one-day rate, overnight lending rate, and it's kind of the cheapest money out there, so to speak. And, you know, things are impacted by it. But what drives mortgage rates is inflation. Because if you're someone who is the recipient of a mortgage payment, and the vast majority, well over 90% are outright fixed rates. And then the majority of the remaining 8% or so are hybrid fixed rates, adjustable rates. So they're fixed for a period of time. So there's going to be a long period of time where the recipient of the mortgage, you've lent the mortgage or the investors lent the mortgage money and they're receiving a payment, the payment's going to stay the same for a very long time. As you receive those payments, you take that and you have buying power. So if you're getting a check for $2,000 and you go out and you buy a shopping list of goods and services for $2,000 over the short term, the next couple of months, you get everything on that list. But over time, inflation, which prices go up, so you get inflation, it erodes the buying power. You can't get everything on that list. Now, when inflation is where it had been, very low in the 1%-ish range, the buying power remains pretty well intact. There's some minor erosion, but it's just that it's minor. But now inflation, depending on what you're looking at, if it's PCE, CPI, which are the two inflation measurements, the consumer price index, CPI, the personal consumption expenditures, PCE. And then there's the headline number. That's the overall number. And then if you strip out food and energy, you get the core. You're going to see inflation has risen pretty dramatically. It's in the 4.9% to 8.1% range, depending on what metrics or measurement stick that you're looking at. But that's significant. And what that means is that prices are going up, so my buying power is being eroded more rapidly. Now, there's nothing you can do about previous mortgages that you've issued. Those you've issued them, you've sold them, that's done. But on new mortgages that you're issuing so that you can sell them, you have to contemplate the more rapid rate of erosion that we're having in this environment. So therefore, the only defense you have is to charge a higher rate so that you can start at a higher perch to offset the more rapid rate of erosion. And I hope that makes sense, because that's the basic cornerstone of what you need to understand if you're going to try and think about which way rates are heading. So the real question is when will inflation come down? Because when inflation comes down, that's when mortgage rates will come down. So if you'd like, I have a couple of slides here, Ryan.
All right, man, let's get into it.
Talk about, you know, first of all, the basic question is, so what is inflation anyway, right? And that's okay, we talk about it, but what is it? It's too many dollars chasing too few goods. So just like anything else, if there's much more buyers bidding up goods, well, the price goes up. So what the Fed wants to do is they want to come in and they want to do something called demand destruction. It's an ugly name, but demand destruction means that they want to take some of these dollars away. They want to destroy demand. So how do you do that? So we just said the Fed does not control mortgage rates, but the Fed does control the price of money, which is called the Fed funds rate. And the Fed funds rate does directly influence things like credit cards, car loans, home equity lines of credit, personal loans. And the big one is the commercial and industrial type loans. But let's just take one example. Let's take a look at a car loan. If we were limited to only be able to purchase what we had, and I'll come off this just for a second to talk about this. If we were limited to only be able to buy what we had in cash or savings, you know, think about it, it's a different world, right? You know, imagine someone going in to a car dealership to purchase a $60,000 car. What if they couldn't borrow the money and get a car loan or a car lease, because leases are credit as well? What if they can only buy what they had cash for? They probably wouldn't buy that $60,000 car. Couldn't buy that $60,000, yep. But yet they do. And oftentimes it's just sign your name, nothing down, yep, right? Yep, sign yep. And drive is a big term.
Yep. So
the seller of the vehicle, the dealership, they received the $60,000. So where did it come from? It literally, poof, is created from thin air. It's a keystroke. And poof, here's $60,000. That's inflationary. That money appearing out of thin air. Do that for roughly every $17 that's in our economy, 16 of it is generated by credit. So you think about how our economy runs on credit. Now, what the Fed's trying to do is make it more painful to borrow. So when rates are very low, the payment's very low, consumer may go out and buy that car and poof, $60,000 is created, because the other end of it is you got to make payments. But if you make the rates higher and make the payment higher, now that borrower has to either qualify or may now contemplate that, whoa, boy, that's a pretty big payment that I'm going to choke on. So perhaps I'll keep the car I have a little bit longer. And therefore, you don't have the infusion of that magical $60,000 that's created. It's the same thing with the big money, commercial industrial. I want to borrow $500 million to build a factory, $1 billion to acquire a company. When the Fed funds rate's at zero and I'm paying a little bit of margin above the Fed funds rate, maybe the economics makes sense, fine. But now with the Fed funds rate over 3 and heading to 4 and maybe higher than that, if you hear some of the Fed members, boy, to start paying 6 or 7% on $1 billion, that's a very different set of economic factors than if it were 2% or 3% on $1 billion. So what they're doing is they're destroying demand. So maybe you don't borrow that money and add those dollars. So let's go back to our chart there. Does that make sense, Ryan?
Yeah, guys. And you know, one of the questions for maybe consumers that don't understand it, like, how did we get here? I mean, the last 2 years, guys, we went through a global pandemic and we had to print a lot of money and give a lot of PPE money away and unemployment money. And so back to full circle, too many dollars. And the Fed also put us into that. And that's kind of the ironic part here is the Fed's trying to undo what they just did the last 2 years. But that made sense. The demand destruction makes a whole lot of sense. Yes. Hopefully that makes sense as to why we're here, trying to unravel what we just lived through the last 2 years through a global pandemic.
Yeah. And it's like an arsonist turning into a firefighter now, right?
So
they're trying to put him out. But in addition to that, Ryan, by keeping rates so low, they made borrowing very attractive, but they also disincented you from saving money because you weren't getting any rate of return. So people weren't going to get a return for saving it. So they spent it, hence more money in. So here comes the Fed. They're hiking rates. And by hiking rates, what they're going to try and do is pull some of the dollars out.
Yep.
I just mentioned savings. Well, Ryan, before we started, we were saying, okay, what's a good investment right now? Well, you know, treasuries are starting to look pretty attractive because you can get the backing of the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. So you'll get your principal return, but even shorter maturities, like a 1 year, is paying over 4%. And if you wait until November 2nd, when the Fed will indeed hike again, that will probably be in the range of 4.5, maybe even higher than that. And for a completely risk-free return, that's pretty attractive, right? So what the Fed is doing is trying to make savings more of an incentive. And therefore, when the Fed hikes, instead of spending it, you tuck it away and you save it. So it takes it out of the economy. So what you're seeing here is less dollars. Now, we also know that not only are goods coming back, but we may actually be looking at a glut of goods, an over inventory. So when you have too much inventory, Ryan, you know, you got Nike out there just on their call saying, hey, we've got too much inventory. There's double order. We didn't know that the supply chain would bounce back the way it's bounced back. And because of that, just like anyone else, when they've got too much inventory on their shelves and they want to get rid of it, what do you do?
Right. And it's hitting listings too, guys. I shared the graphic earlier this week. Year over year listings in some key cities are up 158%.
Let's save that, Ryan, because that's very misleading. So just one second here on that one. Let's just stick with the financial concept on this. I think that, you know, I don't want to mix the two because they're two very, very different ways to look at things economically. The rules are let's go with the rules of money.
Gotcha.
Here. So when you have too much inventory on your shelves, how do you clear that inventory? You put it on sale. So when you do that, we're seeing more goods come on the market at lower prices, and that should help with inflation. Now, we talked about inflation and its relationship to mortgage rates, and here it is. You see, as inflation goes up, this is mortgage rates, they go up. As inflation comes down, mortgage rates come down. And this pattern repeats itself until when? Until the Fed fixes the game. So when the Fed buys mortgage bonds to the extent that they fix the price of mortgage rates to around 3%, yield curve control that they used, even though inflation was going up, mortgage rates didn't move. And that's because during this period, the Fed was buying enough to keep mortgage rates at that level of 3%. Now, they should have let it ride and we wouldn't have this mess. But what they really should have done was try to tame inflation here as it started to rocket higher. They started to tame inflation here because this whole move, the Fed thought it was what? Transitory. And we know the Fed was completely wrong. But if you even look at the way that this works here, right? You know, we see inflation go up, mortgage rates go up. Inflation dips a little bit, mortgage rates dip. Inflation goes up, mortgage rates go up. Inflation dips, mortgage. So we know that there's a very close correlation there. So the question is, okay, so when's inflation going to come down? We already know that there are forces out there that will cause inflation to drive in the lower direction, as I showed you before when we looked at the reasons for less money and more goods. But here's where we can really see it. And this is the exact chart that we went over together when we talked about inflation. When people were talking about it peaking, we said, no way. And we pointed to these 3 months and we said, this is the area. And the word I used with you and many other times was, there's going to be heartburn over the summer for mortgage rates that we're going to have to suffer through. And we're going through exactly what we said was going to happen. It is now happening. We are now facing it. The problem is you can be warned about it and told it's going to happen, but there's a difference in being told and warned and the actual pain of going through it.
Yeah.
So Ryan, we're going through this right now. So how does this work? Inflation on a year-over-year basis on the consumer price index, when you strip out food and energy, you go to the core. So why do we strip out food and energy? We need food and energy, but the Fed can't control that. They can't control weather and food. So the crop's based upon a bumper crop or a wheat crop or whatever like that. And they also can't control energy. If there's, you know, an embargo, a pipeline that goes, the Fed's monetary policy cannot influence that. So they feel they can influence the core, which right now on a year-over-year basis is 6.3%. Way too high. The Fed's target is around 2. But how do we get that core rate? You take individual monthly readings, you add them up, you account for a little bit of rounding and a little bit of compounding, and you get 6.3%. So why did the market have such a horrible month of September? Because in early September, we got the inflation reading for August. of 2022. When we got August of 2022, it replaced August of 2021. Notice how low the reading was for August of 2021, which is why we said there's going to be heartburn.
Right.
You take 2/10, replace it with 6/10, the year-over-year rating went from 5.9% to 6.3%, and the bond market said, oh my gosh. And that's when in the mortgage rate environment went haywire. Now, we have one more month to get through. In a short period of time, Rye, we're going to get the number in less than 2 weeks for September of 2022. That's going to replace this reading for September 21. I have it rounded to 3/10, but it's really like 0.26%. So it's a very low bar. Now, I don't know what the reading for September 22 comes in at. It could actually cause this to come down and the bond market will like it. But just like August, it's such a low reading that we could see a push higher, more likely than a push lower. You see the July reading, it was 3/10, it matched 3/10. So we didn't get much of a change there. It was okay, but it was the August reading that bumped up that caused this problem. If a similar thing happens, we could go through a tough time for the month of October when we get that reading for September. Now, we don't know, so it could be something that's friendlier, but the chances are more likely that it's less friendly. So when's the good news happen? And to answer your question a long way, because we have to understand it, it should begin when we get the October readings for sure. Now, we're going to get this early November, but look at these high inflationary readings that we see in late 2021 and early in 2022 through the first half. They're all pretty high, which means if we get more normalized readings of inflation, especially with recession happening, that's deflationary. The hikes in the Fed funds rate, more savings, slower business, you're going to see inflation readings that will be lower. And that will cause the year-over-year reading of inflation to come down. So what this will do for us is it will cause us to be in a position where we should see inflation come down, 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 and mortgage rates, like they always do, will follow suit. So how long and how much? A couple of things. Late this year, fourth quarter this year, first quarter next year, we should be in a position to see a lot of improvement. And probably by sometime late, very late this year, early next year, we should be able to see mortgage rates dip under 5%. Think about that. Half the mortgages in existence are above 4. So refinance activity may come back. Anybody whose loan you did between April and towards the latter part of this year will be a refi.
We talked about it. Yep.
And then again, Ryan, the thing too is from the housing sector, it starts to loosen things up. Because there's some shock here. My rate's a 3, going to 6. You know, I don't want to give up that 3% rate. So, but I might be able to go from 3 to 4.5 or 4.75 if it means getting the home of my dreams or that I need. So I think things start to loosen up and buyers come back in, first-time home buyers come back in. You know, a lot of good things start to happen in that environment. And I think we will see that. Now, when it comes to inventory and housing, there's a lot of misleading stuff in there.
Yeah, let's unpack that. We didn't plan to talk about it, but it is an interesting stat out there, and I do want to talk about it because it's, you know, they're inflated in the states that you would, in cities that you would think of, you know, like Seattle, my home state, Phoenix, you know, Florida, places, sand states. So you're thinking that's misleading. The narrative would be too many houses for sale. They're going to have to bring their prices down. Are you disagreeing with that or what's your thought there?
Well, I think that inventory builds as it always does. And I'm going to show you that. But I think that there are going to be markets around the country that will see some price declines. Look, our forecast for 2022 is going to be a bullseye. We said mid to high single digits, and that's what we're going to get for 2022. It's going to be a bullseye on that one. If you were to say the next 12 months, I would say that appreciation over the next 12 months will be more flattish. I think the West Coast in the very inflated markets, LA, San Francisco, San Diego, Denver, Phoenix, might experience maybe 4 or 5% give back of the extraordinary appreciation that they've had.
Really just coming back down to earth on the listing prices probably.
Yeah, I mean, yes. And listing give backs on asking price isn't really
right.
Prices on appraisal coming down is two different things.
Yep.
They may experience that, but most of the country will be flat to slight appreciation, low single digits. You can still create a lot of wealth with that. But take a look at a couple of things here. So As we take a look at inventory, right now we've got 1.28 million units in existing home inventory. This is what it was during the bubble. So it's a third of bubble-like conditions. So I don't want people to get worried, but people look at this.
Great perspective, by the way, Barry. I like that.
People look at this and they say, look, what happened in April? April to July. Holy cow. Look at the build in inventory that we're seeing here. It's like, oh my goodness. This is a lot of inventory skyrocketing on the market, right? Well, Ryan, if you look just at this chart, the reason why I say it's misleading is because it doesn't give you the benefit of perspective. So this encompasses a one-year period. What if I showed you 10 years, Ryan? Do you notice a pattern?
Right, for sure.
Every single year, you get this inventory build between April and July or August. Why? Because parents want their kids to get in school at the beginning of the school year, because joining in the middle of the school year, it's a harder adjustment for them. Kids can be tough. They've already formed friendships. So in order to do that, I've got to move into my new home June, July, or August, which means I had to have put my home up for sale when? April, May, June, July. And that's here every single year over and over and over and over and over again. So we see this normal cycle. So what you're seeing in inventory is absolutely normal. And you could already see it cresting. And I anticipate that same cresting in inventory will happen just like it happens every single year. So this phenomenon is something that might cause inventory to build a little bit, but not crazy. You know, in the inventory numbers, what's also, you know, there's 1.28 million units in existing inventory. And you take a look at, you know, what is off the market because it's under contract. That's included in here, believe it or not. You know, if you have a home that's under contract closing next week, it's included in inventory because it's not closed, but it's really not available. So active listings is really 779,000. And you could see the same pattern in active listings. So, you know, while we've seen a build in active listings, it is way below what normal levels of active listings look like. And it's already beginning to roll over and crest. So these are things that, you know, once you gain perspective, you could see why this is not a housing, you know, crash or bubble. Sure, we might see prices come in a little bit, especially in the overheated areas. But over time, you buy that home now, maybe you get a better deal on it. Believe me, 6 or 7 or 8 years from now, 10 years, 12 years from now, when you're looking to sell it, you will do extraordinarily well in that.
Yeah, you talked about basically, hey, you said you showed the year-over-year inflation numbers, and you kind of basically said, hey, this here, put it in perspective. And October, November, we'll probably see a better reading there. And you didn't say this, but kind of unpacking, recapping, probably it will stop seeing this straight up run up in rates because of that. Maybe they go sideways for a while. And you said maybe even fives by end of Q1. Is that?
I think below Q2? I think below five, I think fours. I think mortgage rates have a really good chance to start in the fours. Now, Rye, remember now, the further out you go, the more unforeseen events there are. Now, we did hit a bullseye on our real estate forecast, but we missed it on our rate forecast because while we had the direction right and we said, look, inflation is going to go up, so rates have to go up. We thought that rates would go up, but we did not see them going anywhere near the 6% range. And the reason why we got that wrong was because three factors. One, we didn't think the Fed would be so dumb as to stay asleep at the wheel for so long. Two, we didn't think that our government would be injecting stimulus into an inflationary environment and making that very foolish mistake. That's two. Three, we did not see the Russia-Ukraine situation. Right. So these events that are either out of left field or illogical or whatever, these are the types of events that, you know, can happen and can cause these logical forecasts to be thrown out, you know?
Yep.
A couple of quick points here. One quick side note that people will probably like is where does, you know, out of left field come from, right? We're heading into the baseball end of the season playoffs. So where does that come from? If you think about a runner rounding third base and heading home, the left fielder throwing them the ball, they can't see it. So that ball's coming out of left field, hence the term out of left field. A lot of people don't know. I love these little things.
That's funny.
The other is that when you look at where our housing market is today, you know, we have had a big run up, as you know, and people have been calling for the death of the housing market for a very long time. There's going to be a lot of people saying, "Oh, we told you so." But you know, if that home went from 300,000 to 500,000, seeing it come down to like 480, isn't exactly reason for a victory lap, but they will take that. And on the new construction front, inventory is very misleading. You know, I'm glad to see that there's other publications starting to pick up the metrics that we put in our updates. So they watch our stuff and they're starting to figure it out and putting it out there. But when you hear, okay, there's 9 or 10 months of inventory in new construction, it's very misleading because that's dirt that's for sale. Completed homes, when you look at the completed homes, it's 0.86 months of actual inventory that you can move into. So inventory is still going to be very, very tight. We're forming about 1.7 million households per year, and we're only seeing about 1.3 million homes completed. So there's still a shortage in households.
And isn't that the ultimate metric, supply and demand? Like, the demand is still going to be high because the supply is still short for the very reason you just talked about. No matter what happens with rates, like, people still need homes and they still need to buy and form families and live in homes, and supply is low for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, but rates do hurt us because, sure, you know, we all know that that means the first-time home buyer may move more towards renting, but that does push rentals higher. So, but at some point or another, you do have to have some affordability acknowledgement. So, you know what, Brian, while we're at it, let me just show you one more that I think is important, and that is affordability. So let's talk about that for a second here. I'm just going to show you this real quick because this is an important one for us. And when we look at affordability, right, here is last year. If I were taking out a loan amount of $400,000 to buy a home at rates that were around last year, let's call it $1,800 a month. Now, statistically, according to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the household would be earning about $9,000 a month. So this year, we know real estate values have gone up, right? So let's just say they went up 18%. So now I'd have to borrow 18% more. So that definitely is an additional cost to borrow more money, but the rate's gone up quite a bit. So let's say it's $1,100 a month more because maybe the rate's a little high, whatever it is, $1,100 a month more. And they stop there. But what they don't factor in is that, according to ADP, 25 million records, if you stayed on your job, you increased by 7.6%. You switch jobs, there's fewer switchers, but you made 16% more. So the average is 9%. You take that, and that's $800 a month. So it mitigates this. Now, to be fair, you've got gasoline, food, services that have gone up because of the high inflation and cost that we've seen. So here's the pain point. I'm going up $1,300 a month in cost. We should contemplate the income. It's going up, but not enough to cover this. And that's why it's hurting. But Ryan, let's be really smart now. And I want everybody to be really smart on this. Do something that nobody else does. Look ahead. Chances are that you have fixed this payment. And if anything, you'll have the opportunity to refinance it. But even if you don't refinance to a low rate, you keep the payment fixed, your income will go up. So let's just say you stay at your job and this goes up to 7.6%. Your income now goes up to a greater extent than all of your costs have. So it gets a lot easier. And then heck, what if you refinance to a lower rate? So this is why you would not see a prolonged issue, or you would not see a crash issue, you know, and all of the arguments that people have to try and get headlines. If you look deeper and you look at it analytically and you think a little bit of ahead, you can see why. Now, look, there are times when, if you remember, right, I mean, we accurately forecasted the housing bubble that we had. Heck, I sold the company I had because we felt that we were going to be in danger of all right. You know, created a company called CMPS because I felt that people would be in trouble if they didn't protect themselves with the kind of loans. I just don't see that type of environment here. You know, we see flattish, some areas a little bit down, some areas a little bit up, but we don't see crash.
Love it, man. We went 30 minutes. I want to recap a couple. You think you hit all our viewer questions that I teased at the beginning of the show, but we'll do real quick, quick answers, Barry, just to hammer it home one more time. You already answered indirectly one of the questions with rates. You said, hey, they're probably going to be maybe in the fives in Q1 or Q2. Guys, you're asking us, hey.
And I think under five, actually.
Under
five, as we get late this year, early next year, it depends a lot on the inflation numbers, and it depends on those unforeseen events, right? You know, so they could work for or against this, but it seems to me that we're either like in a recession or about to go into recession. That brings rates down. We see a more inventory. We see less spending. I think the combination of all these will lead us to a improved rate environment, a very good chance to get under five by the end of Q1.
Everybody just jumped out of their seat right there and enjoy Barry. So I love that. But he answered the question as to why is it so difficult to get a rate sheet out? What are you going to do? Are you going to pay a premium for a 6-7% rate when everybody believes what Barry's saying, that rates are going to come back down? So there's no premium pricing, guys. Give your secondary and capital markets and lock desk a little bit of a break, because it's really difficult to put out a competitive rate sheet right now.
They have a tough job right now, the folks in secondary, because it has become less liquid, number one, because of the uncertainty that's out there. And I know that people make the mistake. Please don't do this. Don't say a par rate to the customer.
You've explained that, Barry. You've done such a good job explaining that. That doesn't, it's not what you think it means.
Correct. Par means, aside from golf, that the value of the mortgage is being sold for that same value. So $500,000 mortgage sold at par means it's being sold for $500,000. If it's sold at a discount, you're selling a $500,000 mortgage for less than $500,000. If you're selling it at a premium, $500,000 mortgage being sold for over that. So if the customer is not paying any points, where is the money coming from? It's coming in that gain on sale. So you have to sell it at a premium. So it's not par. It's $500,000 being sold for, let's call it $510,000, so everybody paid. But who's going to spend $510,000 for a $500,000 mortgage? Someone who says, I need a higher rate. And over time, that higher rate will give me a lot more money. And I'm loving it. If that mortgage is out there for 10 years, I'm loving the higher rate. But if they think that mortgage isn't going to last very long because it's going to be refinanced because rates are going to come down, then you're not going to be willing to spend $510,000 for a $500,000 mortgage. Unless you make it really painful where you're going to recoup a lot of that. So the rate's got to be super high, so you're going to get your money back very, very quickly. Or you're not going to do it at all, and you're going to pull your bid on that completely, which is why it's so hard today. It's hard, but it's for a good reason, because the market is smart enough to see
better times are coming.
That better times are coming.
Exactly. Hey, so when you're talking about rates, you know, below five, which again, I love it, might be even the headline for the show because that's very clickable, right? Do you think the Fed's going to have to come back in and start buying mortgage-backed securities, or is that just going to be organically happen?
You never say never, because look at what the friggin' Bank of England's doing now.
Yeah, exactly.
So we don't know. There might be so much pain that the Fed has to do this. And remember, in the last Fed statement, they've used the word pain so many times. Loretta Mester, in a two-paragraph statement, used pain 9 times. So the Fed knows that they are going to inflict a lot of pain on the economy. But just like when we talked about warning and saying it is one thing, the experience is very different, right? So as the economy goes into a recession, or depending on how deep it is, as you know, recession is typically half the world's in recession when they go into it, half the world's not. So the other half pulls it out. But we will probably see a very highly synchronized level of recession in the world, which means who is going to pull us out of this thing? So it may actually be deeper or more prolonged than people are anticipating. And therefore, you might see some crazy activity. But look, the Fed, they don't know. They said that we don't understand inflation. The Fed has these boom and bust cycles because they go way too far to the extremes. They have not handled this well. So could they mishandle it again? You know, your guess is as good as mine. Hopefully, they slow things down and they don't, they tend to drive in the rear with their eyes focused in the rearview mirror. So if they are smarter, like Paul Volcker, Paul Volcker started cutting rates when inflation was over 11%? Because he saw the trajectory. See, Paul Volcker was smart. Said, okay, it was 14.6%. It's coming down to 11.8. I see it's going to be here. I don't want to wait till it gets here and we have crushed everything beyond belief. So let's start easing it down a little bit. Hopefully the Fed gains some perspective and foresight into seeing that they can't destroy demand to the point where it's pummeled. Slow it down, take some cash out, ease inflation, all good for us. But don't go too far. Let's hope.
Better times are coming, guys. Barry just spent 34 minutes explaining exactly why, which we're so thankful for. I'm going to end with a little bit of investment tip. And you and I were talking about it in the green room, and you mentioned it earlier. I don't think anybody heard it. So right now, people are looking at their crypto and it's down. Their stocks are down. But you mentioned one little investment tip that I agree with you. Can you talk about it one more time before we leave?
Yeah, like, you know, a virtually risk-free investment could be a one-year treasury. I'd wait till after the November 2nd rate hike because that should push those yields up a little bit more. And then you'd have a pretty good yield that you can get probably, who knows for sure, but in the 4.5% range for one-year treasury risk-free. I mean, not a bad place to park your money at all. You know, so something that you could look at, could you look at? You know, Ryan, when we close, you know, people are going to, you know, have to go through this period of time. There is light at the end of the tunnel. But if you look at this as an opportunity for yourself, right, this is a market where you can be that beacon of light. Ryan, you were talking about, you know, we wanted to explain the answer. Think about your competitors. Who is really explaining this to their customers? I mean, just think about it. Their customers need the answers. Their referral source need the answers. If you are able to understand this and explain it, who else is doing that? And who else are they going to go for advice or their mortgage or use it for you know, for things that you can do even social media wise or, you know, in the news media? I mean, why not you be the expert?
Yeah, it's better, a lot better. Like, well, you should lock now. We'll refi later. Why? You know, go back and watch those 30 minutes. You can explain exactly why. So that little investment tip, guys, the reason I bring that up is I talked to three of my friends today or this week, actually, and they're not talking about moving $10,000 or $100,000. They're talking about millions of dollars into Barry's strategy. Because right now, I think that's a great return. It's relatively low risk. So that's why I brought it up again. I'm actually going to be moving some money into that strategy as well. So Barry, I love it, man. Thank you so much for 40 minutes again of nothing but education for us. It's really helped me better understand where we're headed and the why, because I'm just a mortgage nerd. So thank you again. Guys, better times are ahead. Like, let's weather the storm. Let's get better at our craft. And on the backside of this, guys, guess what? Great times ahead. See you guys next week.
Hey, there we have it. A little bit of stuff on there. So Ryan and I have followed Barry for a long, long time, and Ryan, and these guys know what they're talking about. And it's like, it's the same thing. I got a lot of stuff out of that, watched that multiple times. It's just like the same thing that he keeps saying, and you know, you forecast up, but you don't know what's going to happen in the economy, right? I mean, so Russia could be dropping missiles on Ukraine and it just changes everything. So
Barry's really, really good though of explaining the behind the scenes stuff that moves the needle, right? Things that have an impact and why we're in a market that we're in. So great stuff. I hope you got value out of that. I know some of that was kind of speaking to the lender, some of it was speaking to the consumer, but we just thought it was worth a share. So
well, it's good because it gives that stuff, like he said, you know, the things the federal government did in COVID to try to help keep the economy going, we're paying that back right now. It's there's no free money. So it's going to be painful for a little while, but it'll be paid back. And then we'll be back in the other side, like they said, with rates dropping a little bit. So that's good. So before we say goodbye, if you like what you heard today, please be sure to like this and then share it. Because it does have a lot of great relevant information in it with what we've got on it. So thanks again for tuning in.
All right. So next week, we're going to be talking with Rick Wadja. He's the CEO of the Indiana Builders Association. We'll be discussing the current housing market, building news, relevant bills, and overall state of the new construction throughout Indiana. We'll see you next week.